December 27, 2019. You were just listening to my music, Bina Barraga's Music for Porn Films. That was music I recorded for porn films I directed. That was in the year, maybe 2006 to 2008, something like that. And if you would like that cassette, you can buy that cassette at babyhans.com. That's BABYHANS.com. Or you can listen for free on SoundCloud. Just do a search for Margie Schnibbe. That's me, S-C-H-N-I-B-B-E. Or Bina Virago, V-E-N-A-V-I-R-A-G-A. So now we're going to stop the music. Music is winding down. There we go. The music is gone. Hello, people. I haven't been here for 2 months because I have had other engagements on Friday night. One of the things I'm working on, too, at K-Chung is our Newsbody site, and it's a site for K-Chung News. And if you are a K-Chung DJ and you'd like to make news, you can make news and upload it to the site kchung.news. You can join the news team and make your K-Chung news, any news, whatever's news for you. For me, I think when I get home tonight, I might record some news about the impeachment of number 45. And there has been quite a heated debate on Nextdoor, on that app. Hopefully it's still there and hasn't been deleted. Some of the comments go on and on a long time, like, he, 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 ha, 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 ho, 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 like crazy. I don't know if a lot of people are drunk when they get on to Nextdoor or stoned, but sometimes there are things, I guess they used to be called flame wars. Do people still use that word? People get on there and they start shit with each other. So, yeah. That is definitely happening there on Nextdoor. But for now, tonight what I'm going to do is I found this book in my nightstand called Dream Book 2015. Who am I? What am I? Where am I? So in 2015, it looks like from May until, for a lot of times in the month of May, and then into June, and now there's something there that something says January 2016. It looks a little out of order. I think that the last entry, I did it mostly for May and June, and then I stopped, and then I did it in, I went back into July. Yeah, so I believe that probably what inspired me, two things may have inspired me to do this. Well, what, first of all, like, I kind of think that writing your dreams down seems kind of stupid to me, or like when people tell you their dreams, like, you're just like, oh my God, can't they just make up something better in their real life? Like, why do you have to listen to someone's dreams? Like at work, one of my jobs, this woman used to talk about her dreams when we'd all have lunch together. And I thought it was like a little bit TMI, you know, like too much information, a little bit too personal, or something like that. Yeah. So, and then it just seems like, you know, like if you're in a creative writing class and people are like, oh, this is my dream, it just seems like, oh, dude, that is so lame. However, two things. One, I think about this time that the Young's dream book, was it the Red Book? Something was being published, or there was a new edition, or maybe it was the first time, and that was pretty cool. You know, Carl Jung made this book with some drawings in it. I would look it up online now and talk more about it, except I just have my phone and it's set to music, so I'm not going to mess with that. So look up the Carl Jung's dream book, and I believe he had drawings along with that. But also, my friend Corazon del Sol did a show of her work, and I believe it's her work, her mother's work, and her grandmother's work. Eugenia Butler is her mom. And Corazon made this super cool video game based on a dream. I believe it was based on a dream, something to do with her grandmother or something like this. But I just thought that it was so cool, the dream, the video game was so cool. And why do I think, I think it was some sort of vaginal thing. It was very, like, eroticized. And I thought that, well, that was pretty, that was intense. And that was, those are two examples of dreams that art made about dreams that I thought were pretty cool. So I said, you know what? I'm gonna write down my dreams. And then I did that for a couple months, and then I stopped I'll get to the when I get to the end, you'll see a little bit maybe why I stopped. And okay, May 2015. This is the I wrote introduction. Recently, I have been having incredibly vivid dreams every night for the past week. Perhaps this is due to interrupted sleep, sharing my bed with someone on a different sleep schedule, and or traffic noise outside the window of the studio. For nearly 8 years, I slept in a quiet bedroom in the back of a house on a quiet street. My best friend Mary died 2 months ago. Mary has often appeared in my dreams. Up until today, I have done my best to remember what I could in the morning, but then would just go about my day without paying too much attention to the dreams. I often have recounted the dreams to my partner Masood and then let them go. My feeling about dreams has always been that they are a rehashing of the unconscious and may or may not have any meaning. Dreams to me are like a scrambled signal of the unconscious. Most nightmares I dismiss as anxiety dreams. Most dreams I actually dismiss as anxiety dreams. I label most of my dreams anxiety dreams because I suffer daily from a great deal of anxiety. Much of this anxiety lays buried under the surface of my efficient and together highly functional self. Thus, these dreams serve as an escape valve, allowing the anxiety to seep out at night. These dreams are an escape hatch for the anxiety I suffer from my internal struggles, problems, insecurities, as well as all the nonsense I suck up from other people all day long at my day job and volunteer gigs. Prior to starting this dream journal, I had 4 straight days of detailed dreams. Now, a few days later, I remember little other than what I recorded this morning immediately upon waking. At that time, after recording notes from the dream I just had the night before, I made a list of a few more dreams from the 3 nights prior, but the details are not fresh in my mind. Number 1. Is this a zombie apocalypse or war? Bodies dissolving. Body parts dissolving, turning into cartoonish reds, yellows, and oranges. A man loses an arm and looks sad. His arm dissolves into web-safe colors. Like an old-school Flash animation, number CC0000, etc. My friend, horror director John Gulager, is one of the warriors. We are all fighting together, and I am not afraid. Number 2. I am working as a performance artist and prostitute in the turn of the 20th century, 1890s or maybe 1880s, 1900s. I feel like I am living an Emil Zola novel. Am I Nana? Do I have my years correct? I am also a junkie, aka heroin addict, though not with needles. I have an exotic life living in the demimonde. I am a celebrity. I have lots of fun. In one scene, I am naked, painted with white body makeup, white grease paint all over. I am rolling my fleshy body against the fleshy body of another woman. We are undulating against each other while standing up on stage or on the dance floor of a party. It is all great fun. I know I am a junkie, but I am also a superstar in my scene and having a great time. My mentor from grad school is there, Berenice Renault, and she approves. She is having a great fun, too. We are all in the scene together. Number 3. I am a director of a performance in a black box theater cafe. There is a group of actors present. I did not start the rehearsal soon enough, and I am not prepared. I don't know what the show is, and I cannot remember my lines. As well as being the director, I am also an actor in the production. I am not prepared. I am embarrassed and panic-stricken. The show is supposed to open that night. My friend, horror director John Gulager, is there, but he cannot help me. I have failed. Wednesday night, Thursday morning dream, 5:14:15. We're on a reality TV show about the past or near past or present, vivid alt days, but that was almost 10 years ago. The producer drives me and white male into a bland, suburban-looking neighborhood south of the city. What city? I'm not sure, though later I seem to be in Baltimore. The white male is supposed to be someone I've worked with closely in porn, maybe Ian MacKay, but does not look like him. looks like a very regular-looking white guy with brown hair. Chris Wilcher or Carl Handel? The neighborhood is hilly with wide streets and trees. The producer is trying to show us how popular the white guy is with the suburban kids. We stop the car, the white guy gets out, and the car is surrounded by white kids who recognize the white guy. We have pot to sell, mostly leaves, not buds. I believe the popularity may be related to the marijuana. I have to go to a house, though I'm not sure why. I am in an anonymous house in a white room with a vial of marijuana leaves. I give my pot to two young men, one white, one black. I wonder why I have not heard from the producer yet. I was supposed to finish the taping. I wonder if something is wrong. I look at my phone, and the battery is in the red. My phone has run out of power, so I did not get the call. I feel panic-stricken, but there is nothing I can do, so I leave. I am in the old bedroom of Annie Richards' house in Hastings-on-Hudson, my hometown. She no longer lives there, but the room is inhabited by another younger woman I know who has decided to move home to her family's house. Maybe it's Sarah Showman or another woman in her 20s. She is working on projects, professional projects, either as a writer or movie editor. There are empty wine glasses in the bedroom. I am walking down an urban street. It is not far from the house where I was in the room with boys and the marijuana. I was a drug dealer. Gage Clark was somewhere close by. When I said, I should move here to Baltimore, she said, yes, you should. I was in a second or third story room with my dead phone battery. I had previously asked for an iPhone 5 charger at the last house I visited, the one with the young woman in the bedroom. Although she had an iPhone 5, it was the wrong model, so I had to continue to search and have come back here. It feels like the same house, but this room overlooks a street near the water. It feels like Red Hood, Brooklyn. Jared Baxter sits at a PC computer. He hands me a cable with a USB plug on one end. I'm not sure the phone jack will fit, but it does. I start to charge my phone. I plug in my phone and wander into another room with broken slats in the floor. I say to a middle-aged white man, these will be fixed soon. And he agrees. The whole house is being fixed up. I go outside and plant a vine into a hole I find in the concrete patch next to a large boulder. This is a large pile of rocks patched with concrete in between. I am walking city streets. I see a group of familiar friends from the Commonwealth and Council Gallery. Jeff, that's Jeff Tuck. Or is that Jeff Cordner? Let's see. Jeff is on his way to get a fully body waxing. It must be Jeff Tuck. Jeff Tuck is on his way to get a full body waxing. It is a gift from David. Oh, that must be David Richards, his husband. I offer him a Valium and he accepts. I say, the Valium are back in my room at the house where I am charging my phone. Would you like to walk with me? He accepts, and we walk together, alone, separate from the group. The group has disappeared. He will catch up with them later. He is not David, but someone else, a straight guy with short brown hair and a short beard, like G.I. Joe, 1970s style. We are walking in an urban landscape, something like Times Square in the old days before Disney took over. I see a large moving box truck, with the name of the production company. I had been working for one of the reality TV, for the name of the production company I had been working for on the reality TV. Written on the side of the truck, I say, there they are. I miss them. I am at the airport, somewhat lost. There is an escalator, and Mary Bellis stands at the bottom of the escalator, to the left of the escalator next to a potted tree. She has my luggage. Here are your bags. You can go home now. I fucked up the show, I say. I know, she says, but it's okay. I respond, but they only gave me $60, not the full amount. I know, she says, but it's better than nothing. It's okay. It doesn't matter. Mary looks beautiful, not sick or dead, even though we both know that she is dead. Her hair shines a beautiful burgundy red, and she is confident and calm. That was all one dream. That was long. It took a long time to write that. So this looks like the next day, Friday morning. 5:15:15. Reminiscing good times with Sandro Smiley Barnacle. Memories of a performance art troupe. Watching a sex video of the two of us. My ass in fishnet stockings. He masturbates. Teresa Geary and I are in the outdoor movie theater. It seems like a steampunk style event. We forget to eat food and contemplate leaving the amphitheater to find a restaurant. We ask the ticket taker at the gate, and he informs us that the movie is about to begin. We had given up our good seats to seek out a restaurant. Now we must go back and find others. Halfway through the movie, or maybe it is just the beginning, Teresa remembers that she has brought some garden tomatoes, cherry or grape tomatoes, to crush and cook, mixed with cheese and some kind of pasta carbohydrate. I say that I don't eat carbs, but I will make an exception. Al Pacino is masturbating. He is young, like from the movie Serpico, but without the facial hair. He lubes up his cock with yellow hand cream and jerks it. Then he bends forward and sucks all the cum out of his cock. His chest is hairy. I am working in a multiracial, multi-ethnic office. Someone has decided that we will only listen to music by white people over the office PA stereo system. My coworkers are unhappy but silent. I try to be silent too, but speak up because I miss listening to Marvin Gaye. I am afraid that I will get in trouble for speaking my mind. I am driving the car. I pull into a driveway that I think is a street. A man had waved me into the driveway, so I followed. The man then had to help me back out into traffic. Back out into traffic. Oh, that's the end of the sentence. This is the same dream. Okay. Yeah, it's the same dream. I live secretly on the ground floor of a commercial space. The front door opens directly into a busy passenger sidewalk. Through the screen door, a Chinese couple see me. The woman is pushing a baby carriage and looks directly at me as if expecting to see the old tenant. I feel guilty because I know I am a gentrifier. I am having some work done on my car, or perhaps some other vehicle. There is a tow truck. There is a misunderstanding about the price of the repair. I am standing at a bus stop in a city that feels like Manhattan. A black man offers me a red, white, and blue Metro card as a gift. He says, take this, please. I insist. Saturday morning, 5:16:15. I am mourning the death of my young Asian wife. I am at her parents' apartment, meeting them for the first time. I express my condolences in the best way possible, given the language barrier. Am I a man or a woman? They understand. I am mourning the death of my best friend, Mary. There is a party in her apartment, yet it is not exactly her apartment. It does not look like her apartment in New York City, but I know that it is hers. The party is filled with middle-aged swingers, creepy types I do not want to have sex with. One man is interested in me and performs a sexual act upon himself. That act is unclear to me, but I know that it has occurred. I am in an old car at a red light at the corner of Salmon River Road and Jackson Avenue in my hometown. As a kid, my father and mother always told me that this was a dangerous intersection. The car is familiar but not specific. Perhaps it is my 1968 Buick Skylark, although my age feels like the present day, not the past. It is the middle of the night or early morning with no traffic, maybe 3 or 4 a.m. My car is completely dead. There is no power. I am frozen in the eastbound lane of Ravensdale Road. All of the lights are out on the car, and I feel scared that I will be hit by another car in the darkness. There appear to be no streetlights or traffic signals working either, or perhaps I do not see them. The police arrive, and I am scared that I will be arrested for drunk driving, although I have not been drinking. I turn the key in the ignition as the officer is standing next to my window, speaking with me, and quite suddenly, the car whizzes back to life, the lights are on, and the engine revs. I am back in Mary's apartment now, but again, it is not the apartment I know from memory, but a space that is dark and red and brown. It may have been the apartment that I had known from the swingers party, or it may be a kind of small country home. I am there to walk a black and white dog. I am nervous to be there in the dark and empty space. I am afraid to turn a corner and enter a back room. I am afraid that she is there, lost and undead. Sunday morning, 5:16:15. After marijuana and sex, I fell asleep at 8:30 p.m. Oh, this is an introduction. This is in the dream. This is the real life. After marijuana and sex, I fell asleep at 8:30 p.m. and awoke numerous times during numerous dreams. But now, upon waking for the final time, I only remember one. I am an actor in somebody else's movie. The director is a boyish-looking middle-aged male with short, dirty blonde hair and a clean-shaven face. The apartment is beige and brown. Typical, cheap-looking furniture, wall-to-wall carpet, nothing distinctive about it. The filming is going late, and I've been asked to return tomorrow. The scenes I had been asked to perform in the living room made no sense to me. Look at two book jackets, masturbate, facing the camera, turn sideways, and pretend to be taking a shit while wearing a blue terry cloth bathrobe. I was concerned that performing all of these actions might take too long if they were shooting on film. It would be much easier and cheaper if it was going to be shot on digital video. I am outside an East Coast mansion. I am told that someone likes my sculpture and would like to acquire it. A large brown ceramic piece, 5 feet tall, with twisted limbs and a tulip-shaped base, is taken into the woods for safekeeping. It is a secret that my works are being purchased. These works may or may not be used in a movie. The next day, we return for the filming. My driver is my boyfriend from high school, Nick Kane. However, we are both the age we are now, 51. To get to the set, we drive through a Midwestern-style housing development. A group of ranch-style homes from the 80s or 90s built upon brown dirt, rolling hills. We are looking for the film set and both agree that the landscape has been ruined by these ugly housing developments and that living in this way has had a negative impact upon creativity and overall culture. We arrive at a Spanish-style apartment building in a somewhat urban area, perhaps a quiet urban street. There are rows of names next to buzzers, but no one the day before had told me which buzzer to push or had given me a name. I look for David Richard, the art collector's name, but cannot find it written next to any apartment number. I take a guess and choose a name similar to his. I am correct. I have made the right choice, and we are buzzed in. On set, I realize that the production staff is as disorganized as the day before, and that it is likely that we will not be able to shoot everything in one day. As I am just an actor, this disorganization is no fault of mine, so I do not feel responsible. I don't really feel comfortable taking a shit on someone's living room carpet anyway, and I don't understand why it is a part of the movie, and I am told my motivation is jealousy. I feel a bit nervous, but decide to just wait and see what happens and agree to perform my role as expected. I just have to say, I don't remember any of this. There's so much sex and movies and friends of mine being around with poop and sex and masturbation. It's just making me laugh. This there's a small publisher who asked me to do a book, and I have my old poems and some other stuff, and then I just found this, and I think the poems and the zine from that I wrote on Mary's couch is probably not long enough for a book. You know, I mean, you want a book to be, I don't know, gosh, that wouldn't even be, even though it's like one poem per page, I think there's 50 poems. I don't know. You want a book to be over 100 pages, right? So maybe this is it. But I'm going to have to type it up, you know, or like scan it and send it somewhere where they type shit up, you know? Anyway, I don't know how much that costs. So anyway, okay, so now I feel embarrassed. I feel embarrassed by these dreams. I haven't read this since I've written it. Okay. Tuesday morning, 5:19. Yep, let's back up if you're just tuning in. This is Margie.la. It's Margie Schnibbe. And I found this book of dreams, you know, from 2015 in May and June, and then one time in July, which is the end, which is a sad part. It's a sad dream. Yeah. I mean, it's not, anyway, the ending is sad, so I won't get to the ending yet. So so I'm just reading these dreams, and I'm feeling a little bit embarrassed. So I just need to take a sip of water. I would play some music, but I don't want to. We don't have much time left because Jerome comes and does his show after mine. So usually he's here by now. That's Margie.LA drinking some water. Okay. Tuesday morning, 5/19/15. We were in a white studio type of building located in the garage driveway of the Richards family home on Riverview Place in my hometown. I was with Tulsa Kinney of Artillery Magazine. We may have been feeling slightly high or drunk, and we were looking at something, though I'm not sure what it was we were looking at. I awoke with the memory of the Richards garage filled with bicycles and junk and playing there with Annie Richards. One day, her little brother, James, dipped her Barbie doll in either gasoline or a reddish liquid that may have been motor oil. I did not understand why this would do such a horrible, why he would do such a horrible thing, and was happy that no one in my family would do this to my Barbie dolls. I can see her face, dyed red and matted brown hair. In real life, this may or may not have happened. The toilets were clogged and then began to leak. Water seeped out from the lid and also the base. My mother said she did not want to fix them, but then Nemi, my old plumber from Silver Lake, appeared. I thought that he'd fixed the toilets, but he had not. He had merely put a toilet seat on top of a plastic receptacle, something that looked like a giant mop bucket, but was really just a portable toilet. I did not want to use this portable toilet that could contain other people's poop and pee. I refused. I don't recall much about the house. It was not where I grew up, but somewhere else. There were two toilets and a glass door, French door, to the outside and a tree-lined street. I went to the supermarket, and in the parking lot, my ex-husband, Trevor Miller, was driving a minivan. He looked the way he did in a photo of himself from the early 20s. What the hell is that? Well, I don't know. Sorry, I'm interrupting. Oh, my eyes are tearing because I'm wearing makeup, so getting foggy because I'm so freaked out by this book. He looked the way he did in a photo of himself from his early 20s. In waking life reality, he never learned to drive. Back at the house, one of my opera co-workers, a young, slim, brown-haired girl, was stoned on pot with red and watery eyes. She had just returned from the bank, not her own bank, but a bank where she had set up a special account just for opera productions. Her own bank refused to take her paycheck. An actor from the Shakespeare School, who had become an astrologer and psychotherapist, was also there, but I have no idea what she was doing. That's Gia. I don't know why I didn't put her name in there. That's Gia Buonagorno. I'm going to put her name in here when I type this up. I was preparing for an art show by doing nothing. I was worried. The show was opening in 2 days, and I did not know what I was going to show, and nothing had been framed, and the gallerist had not been checking up on me. I was worried, scared, perhaps even terrified, but would not let anyone know. Everyone was counting on me to do a good job. Gia, that's funny, all these people who show up in this book. Okay, I'm checking the time. K. Chung, Margie.LA, what time is it? Someone put a little cell phone stand in here, and it's very cute, and I like it. It's 7:40. Where's Jerome? Okay. I'm going to keep going. I'm going. Okay. Thursday morning, 5/21/15. It was my job to bring flowers to the wedding. It was Young Chung's wedding. Fuck, dude. That's funny. I found a florist woman who did flowers out of her apartment. I think she had an online business, which is how I found her. I parked my black Kia near her place on a slight incline near a park. It felt like MacArthur Park, except that the street appeared to be East Coast Street, perhaps due to the type of leaves on the ground or style of metal fence, old wrought iron. Inside the apartment, the woman put together a few floral arrangements, more than I needed, but I accepted and paid her what she asked, which was $84. I can't read that word. This is what was printed on the invoice. This is what it was printed on the invoice, so I paid it. One of the arrangements had white puffy flowers, perhaps a hydrangea, and a long black ribbon. I didn't really care what it cost, even though I realized that I could have just gone to the floral district and purchased the same flowers, same $20 worth of flowers myself, and dress them up with my own ribbons. However, I know that I did not have time to do all of that work myself, so I was happy to pay someone else. This woman was sort of regular-looking, 30-something, white, with mousy brown hair. She was incredibly enthusiastic about her flowers, even though she was selling me flowers that had been left over from another job. I was just happy to have the floral bouquets. I returned to where I had parked my car, but my car was gone. I thought maybe I'd forgotten where I parked it, so I walked all around. There were old buildings at the top of the short hill. Everything reminded me of northern Manhattan and the Bronx, maybe Broadway, near Morningside Park. If I have my geography correct, these are places I used to know and can no longer remember the precise driving directions since I no longer live there. I enjoyed looking at the stone apartment buildings and around where I'd parked my car, but I was frustrated that my car had vanished. I was sure it had not been stolen, but I was completely confused. I kept thinking that I'd forgotten where I parked my car, but was simultaneously 100% sure that I knew exactly where I'd parked the car. No one would ever steal a cheap car like a Kia, I was sure. It was as if I turned my back and the car was gone. There was a battle going on in my mind. I am at the wedding. I made it on time with the floral bouquets. However, it is not Young's wedding, but JP and Coral's wedding. That's funny. JP and Coral's wedding. That's JP is Julianne Parr, and Coral is JP's wife. My father and I are at his service station in my hometown, Hastings-on-Hudson, New York. We are looking at a junk car on the top level of the lot. We always called them junk cars, but these cars are totaled out. Wrecks cars. They're wrecks that had been in crashes. My father is there with me, and we are looking at a car crash. Is this the same? That's Friday morning. That was Thursday. Now we're on to Friday. Friday morning, 5:22:15. I'm in Kerhonkson. That's Kerhonkson, New York, at the Shakespeare School, making that everything junk coffee cake. The recipe is simple. You take the leftover oatmeal from breakfast, add a couple of eggs and some flour, blueberries and a tiny bit of baking powder, maybe a splash of vanilla and some cinnamon, and voila, cake for lunch. Once you understand intuitively the chemistry of baking, you can throw together all kinds of cheap and delicious and carb-filled treats. Wasn't that a dream? Saturday morning, 5:23:15. Masood and I are in bed. The bed is on an airplane. I don't know where we're traveling to, but when we get into the bed together to sleep, we are on an airplane. It's an airplane, but it also feels like an apartment. The whole house is traveling. We know that we will go to sleep in one location and wake up in another. This feels a bit stressful for us, but we understand and accept it. I am in a discount type of store that feels like a chain, maybe like the Walmart grocery store on Cesar Chavez and Grand Avenue. I want to purchase red wine and choose a product that looks like a table lamp, but it is actually an oscillating fan with wine contained in its base. I show the product to Gregory Barnett, and he approves, although he wants to know how I got it there so fast. Monday morning, 5:25:15. I am in Lincoln Heights. I know it's Lincoln Heights, but it appears larger, more spread out, with downtown LA appearing farther in the distance, sparkling like Oz. Broadway is still Broadway, but wider, and everything has a warm pinkish-orange glow. I am in a dollar store looking for coat hooks. I check the section of Rubbermaid-like cheap plastic items, but cannot find hooks that I like. I see something similar, but it is some sort of product that is used for taking care of babies. I find two pair of tights and purchase those. I turn them inside out, revealing the exterior texture to be fuzzy and gray with a bit of light brown. The tights now appear to be patterned, like slate and stone, like furry linoleum. I also purchase a jumbo pack of cigarettes. The cigarettes are all white, including the recessed filters. The pack is all white with simple black text. I do not read the text, but it is familiar to me. But the design of the pack feels more modern than I had recalled. This is the first pack of cigarettes I had purchased in many years because I was a non-smoker. I put my purchases in my bag and leave the shop. I am looking for the bus to go to college. I think I am late for class, but cannot recall the schedule, exactly what class I am supposed to be in, and the last time I had attended. The class is either ceramics or an art theory class. I don't want to fail, so there would be lots of catching up to do. But I think I could do it if I could just speak with the teacher. My head feels funny because I cannot remember things, and I am moving very slowly. Each movement I make feels like I am peeling back the skin of an onion one layer at a time. I don't know my next move until I complete each task at hand. There's Jerome. I am in a cafe in Echo Park. The cafe is multi-tiered and filled with locals. I am jealous that I had to travel so far to get here that I could not just walk down the street from my home. The cafe feels like it is on Echo Park Ave, but it appears to be on a sloped hillside with big windows looking out on trees. I am smoking my cigarettes and feel okay about it, even though I am a non-smoker. The cigarettes are my dirty little secret. I finish smoking and put the pack of cigarettes into my bag. I can see my childhood friend Fido, that's Fido Xavier, and say hello. I wish that I had not moved so far away. I wish that I still lived close to his house in Los Feliz. I don't talk with him much other than the friendly hello. How are you? Did you know that I moved away? Then I say, I have to go to school, and I exit down multiple stairs. I am in an elevator with three other people, a middle-aged white guy with short cropped hair and dry cleaning, and two women in business clothes, one African-American and one Latino. The space is rectangular and cramped. We are all looking up at the floor lights, I think I meant to write fluorescent lights in the ceiling, and trying not to make eye contact. I assume that we are all thinking the same thing. We are hoping that the elevator does not get stuck and that we will not be trapped together in such small confined space. For a moment, I have the fear that if the elevator is stuck between the floors, that I will get all hot and panicky and will not be able to breathe. But then I convince myself that I'll be okay because the other people look friendly and nice, and I do not have my cigarettes to smoke. Oh, and I do. I have my cigarettes to smoke if I have to panic attack. I am walking down a tree-lined hill in Echo Park. I know it's Echo Park, but the incline looks more like some of the streets in the Hollywood Hills, Laurel Canyon, or maybe Brentwood. I see a man in white tennis shorts and say hello. I know that he is a resident of the neighborhood. I am jealous and wish that I was living there, too. The sun is shining and feels warm on my skin. The trees gently sway in the breeze, and I continue walking. I am not unhappy. All right, so Jerome's here, so I'm going to wrap it up. I got like around, let's see, 10 more pages or 15 more pages, but I'm going to read the last entry in this book, and that is, I'm going to read the last three. This is in July, okay. Masood disappeared the Monday after July 4th. So that would be, I don't know, like July 13th or something. This would have been Thursday. He disappeared on a Monday. Masood is gone, dreams, times two. Masood is not here with me right now. Thursday morning, July 16th, number one. There are groups of Middle Eastern people milling about in a white room. There is a tank with a pointed top that we keep moving around. It looks like one of the cartoon missiles in the old comic strip spy versus spy. I am dragging a tank around. It feels like an oxyacetylene type of tank. I am trying to be careful. This missile tank is a prop for the American people to witness. It is not a real bomb. It is a welding tank that does require a bit of special handling, but is no different than many other gas tanks used for various medical or creative or industrial applications. This feels like a performance piece. Masood and I are fucking. I have a strong visual image of a male plug entering a female power source on my on a multi-outlet and grounded power strip. I have a fierce orgasm that wakes me up. There's a stain in my panties. Tuesday morning, July 21st. I go to the west side to see Masood. I did not give any advance notice. The dental office appears to be more of a research lab than a dental office. There are many men in white lab coats. Most of the men are brown-skinned from Middle East, India perhaps, also India, and Africa. Everyone welcomes me. Masood comes out from the office to greet me. One of the men provides 75 cents so I can have a soda from the vending machine. Everyone likes me, and I feel as if everyone has been expecting me. Why did I wait so long? I'm at the bottom of a staircase to a two-story motor court type of motel or apartment building with long exterior balconies and with apartment motel doors. There is also a wooden walkway on the ground. The light appears to be yellow or orange. This light emanates from the informal spaces. Why am I here? Yeah, well, you know, those dreams, one a few days after Masood disappeared, and then the one the next week, he was dead. Masood was dead. He had a fear when he told me when he was a kid, he was afraid that his mother was going to put a bomb in his backpack and strap him to a tank and make him a suicide bomber. I don't know if that was, you know, he had mental illness, if that was like paranoia, but he grew up in the Iran-Iraq war and he was very scared. He had PTSD, but it's strange because he liked fireworks so much, so I, and loud noises, but he, this was a fear of his that he told me. The second dream, the Indian guys, an African, they're doctors. He was in the hospital. Everyone, no one told me. See, no one told me. But of course, Masood, maybe he didn't want me there, or maybe he was waiting for me. So, all right, I got one more quick one. So, yeah, so reading that the other day really blew my mind. Monday morning, 7/19/15. So it's July, anyway. I guess it's like, I don't know. Well, it's out of order, obviously. Mary and I are at a rave and get arrested. Mary is bathed in a reddish and golden light the way she always seems to come to me now. The color purple hovers somewhere in the background, but not on her face. The color purple is always there, but is not always detectable by the human eye. It is a feeling, an instinct, a purple glow. The women are split up into different groups. We sit on benches waiting to be processed for incarceration. Mary and I are separated, but she says it's okay. I speak to a young woman seated on a bench who has just been released. She is a white woman with long brown hair and black Converse Chuck Taylors. She wears purple pants. That was a recurring dream I had about Mary, that we're always like on a bench waiting to be processed, you know. I don't know what the hell that's about, you know, but I had that dream a lot about Mary. You know, we're always on this bench, me and Mary, waiting to be processed, you know, for what? I don't know. I have to think about that one. All right, Jerome's here, so I'm gonna sign out soon. Let me see if I can start this music again. This is it playing? I don't hear it. Come on, bitch. There it goes. This is from Vina Braga's music for porn films. Music made by Marjorie Schnibbe for porn films she directed in, 2006, 2007, 2008. As you can see, listening to my dreams are filled with porn. So thanks everyone. K Chung Radio, December 27th, 2019. Marjorie.LA. Peace.